Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Now, in Australia, in the 1901 census, 96% of people identified as Christian, and half of all adults regularly attended church, we're told. 100 years on, though, things have changed somewhat. Around 61% of people still tick their kind of nominally Christian box on the census, although only about 8% of people regularly attend worship services. What happened? How did Australia become a post-Christian country, as many people are describing it? Is it really post-Christian?
To consider these and other related questions, Roy Williams is with us, the author of Post-God Nation, How Religion Fell Off the Radar in Australia, and What Might Be Done to Get It Back On. Welcome, Roy.
Great to be here, Natasha.
Roy, you say in your book that religion is no longer socially significant and that Christianity seems to be perceived to be implausible, undesirable, or irrelevant. I take it that this bothers you. Why does it bother you?
Well, it bothers me as a believing Christian, obviously, because I would argue that the fate of individual souls is at stake for eternity. But putting that theological question aside, I also think it's a huge historical and sociological problem for this country.
So the subtitle to the book really suggests that religion falling off the radar is a problem. So your subtitle is How Religion Fell Off the Radar in Australia and What Might Be Done to Get It Back On. Presumably plenty of people don't think it should get back on.
Look, there is unquestionably a small minority, still a fairly small number, in my opinion, of hardcore atheists or unbelievers, people who are positively hostile to belief. But I think they're not the real problem, so to speak. The problem is the broad mass of Australian society that were simply indifferent to religion, and Christianity in particular, who basically don't know the first thing about it and who've rejected something they really don't properly understand. So in the second half of the book, what I'm trying to do is two things. Firstly, explain how that situation came about from the position at Federation, which Simon has mentioned, and secondly, to make some modest suggestions about what might be done about it, which will hopefully convince not just existing Christians, but people with an open mind.
Yeah, Roy, you quote Tom Frame's book, Losing My Religion, when he says the majority of Australians have either no idea what the Christian religion is offering or they've rejected something that they mistakenly think it is offering. Now, you say that was you up until the age of 35.
Well, indeed, it was. I was raised in a non-Christian family. I went to state schools. I didn't get a decent religious education. I got a very good education in just about everything else and then studied at university and worked as a professional. But it wasn't until my mid-30s that I started investigating these questions and realised how important they are and how fascinating they are. And I think many Australians are in the same boat as me. And part of that reason for that is the education system, which I deal with in the book.
Your basic argument is that the Judeo-Christian worldview has had a huge and largely positive impact on our country. Would it be fair to say that that impression grew the more research that you did into this topic?
Yes, absolutely, Natasha. In fact, I was astounded. I expected to find certain things, and I already knew certain things when I started writing the book. But that first half of the book about the Judeo-Christian heritage of the country really grew and grew. In fact, it became a bit of a problem for the publisher because I had a whole book worth of material on that alone. I was really amazed at how much I found. Firstly, such utterly basic things that we all take for granted as the scientific method, the study of history, the notion that all people are equal, egalitarianism in other words. These are all products, long-term products of the Christian church over the centuries. And then you drill down into Australia more particularly, and I argue that, again, for example only, the very discovery of the continent, the survival of the Aboriginal people from extermination, which was a very real threat, multiculturalism, federation, all of these things tied up inextricably with the churches and individual Christians, great individual men and women, motivated by faith.
Now, Roy, I'm sure you're going to get into some really interesting discussions when people come to read this book. You should prepare yourself for that if you haven't already. But I'm imagining lots of people will challenge even those things that you've been talking about. And they'll want to say things like, well, it was the Enlightenment, or we'll go back to the Greco-Roman times and tell. Now, you deal with this in the book, don't you? And I think trace a very sort of sober assessment of this. You acknowledge some of that, but you do say that really the things that we accept and take for granted and are very glad of are mostly traced to the Judeo-Christian heritage.
That's true. I admit to being a disciple of a man I know you admire, Simon, Edwin Judge, one of the great Australians, one of the truly eminent Australian historians. And he, as he explains it, it's an exercise in comparison between the classical world, the Greco-Roman world, and the Christian world that Jesus and his followers created. And Judge's argument, and I agree with it after studying it very carefully, is that things like the very notion of charity being a good thing, to take one example, are products of Christianity and only Christianity. They're in fact not just didn't exist in classical times, but the opposite was actually more the conventional wisdom. I'm not arguing that the Enlightenment, for example, was unimportant. Clearly it was very important, and Enlightenment values mixed with Christian values were very much on the agenda at the very time Australia was colonised and created. And Manning Clark made this argument that to understand Australian history, you've got to see it as a three-way contest between Catholicism, Roman and Irish, British Protestantism, and Enlightenment values. And there was a fourth Indigenous spirituality layered onto that. Now, that's actually quite an unfashionable view now, even though Clark's sort of an icon, and certainly not a conventional Christian in his lifetime, though he was the son of a Protestant minister, of course. But that's how he saw Australian history, and I agree with him.
Now, mentioning these sons of Protestant ministers, I happen to be one of those, and you say that, and this doesn't include me, of course, but it was unbelievable how many you found, how many sort of influential Australians were that very thing.
Sons and daughters, I might add. I mean, to take one great example, Sir Samuel Griffith. So, some people would argue he's the greatest Australian who ever lived. The man who drafted the Constitution, in effect. Also an excellent Premier of Queensland in the lead-up to Federation, first Chief Justice of the High Court. He was the son of the first Congregationalist minister in Queensland. That's how he came to be in the colony. And although he wasn't a conventional Christian or not as devout as his parents would have wished, I make the argument that his values were absolutely rooted in that upbringing, that Judeo-Christian upbringing, and our Constitution reflects it. So these are just one example. There are literally dozens. I was amazed. Explorers in particular seem to be overrepresented, and another was suffragettes. Virtually all of them were pious, devout women, but a few of them were actually daughters of clergymen.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith, and we're speaking with Roy Williams, who is the author of a new book, Post-God Nation: How Religion Fell Off the Radar in Australia and What Might Be Done to Get It Back On. Now, Roy, you seem to be saying that whatever people think about Christianity, whether it's true or completely false, that it's important for people to understand the influence that it's had on Australian society. Why is that? Why does it matter?
Well, because it's our history. It's as simple as that. All great civilizations since the dawn of man have known where they came from. Certainly that was true throughout Christendom for 2,000 years and in the great non-Christian societies and empires of the world. Your average citizen and certainly leaders and opinion makers knew where they'd come from. We're in a bizarre situation now where it's not just the average citizen but really well-educated opinion leaders, the elite in politics, education, especially the universities, who either have never been taught this history or do know it, but are sort of choosing to act as gatekeepers and suppress it or distort it. And I mean that literally. I sound a bit like an old fuddy-duddy in saying that, but it is actually true. And I think we need somehow to get this knowledge back onto the curriculum in schools and at universities.
You make some suggestions as to how that might happen, and you're really arguing for a very robust treatment of religion as a key part of the curriculum with its theology and philosophy and the history of the Bible, that type of thing, as part of this.
Correct.
Some places do this, but it tends to be in independent schools, and even then you say not, it's sort of lip service, not done with any degree of seriousness.
Yeah, I am critical of even many of the so-called church schools for doing it in a fairly token fashion, and I do think the wealthy Protestant schools are, historically have got more to answer for here. The Catholic system traditionally has been the most serious about religion, although even them, they're not quite what they used to be because, of course, they're no longer staffed by nuns and brothers as they were overwhelmingly. But it's still a compulsory part of the curriculum in most Catholic schools. It's not in Protestant schools by and large. But that's only a third of Australian children. Two-thirds of Australian children go to state schools. And at least two generations now, and I include myself, grew up with only the most pathetically thin idea of what not just Christianity is all about, but all of the arguments, all of the theistic arguments, and all of the great world religions. And I'd also make this point, that the world outside of the West, second and third worlds, are becoming, if anything, more religious, while the West is slipping into agnosticism or indeed atheism. That makes it much harder for citizens of the West to understand what's motivating people. And I think that's a real danger in foreign policy, in cultural assimilation, in all sorts of things.
What about personally and individually? What do people lose when they don't have access to wise answers to some of life's deepest questions?
One answer is they're sitting ducks for extremists of all stripes, whether religious or otherwise. So because they haven't had an education in ideas that have been mulled over for 3,000 years or more, they're not in a position to know when something is just an old idea that's been tried and rejected in the past or some twisted version of an old and respected idea. So that's one danger. But drilling down further, I mean, we come here to the ultimate questions of existence. I mean, what's the purpose of life? Is it simply to do whatever you can to maximise your own pleasure and advancement, provided you avoid technical breaches of the law, which may or may not be enforced against you? You know, is that what life is all about? Or is man, being a special being, well, that's another question. Is man a special being, or are we just, as Stephen Hawking once said, chemical scum on a moderate-sized planet? I mean, the religious view is man is in some way special. Each individual is in some way special. And free will is a real thing, so we do choose our conduct. Morality is real. It's not an artificial construct. And that somehow or other, in some way that we only understand dimly, this life is not all that there is. It's a sort of moral arena, as it were. The soul will live on. These are the deepest questions. And once you've addressed them, your life cannot but change. I know I'm speaking here from personal experience, absolutely nothing original about this. Literally billions of people down the ages have described what having a personal religious faith does for them and to them. And I would argue that on the whole, the Christian faith at least has been a positive force for good, especially amongst people at the upper levels of society in all fields who change things for the better. And that is definitely borne out by Australian history, and I try to make that case with dozens of examples in Postcard Nation.
So, Roy, a lot of our conversation so far may have sounded a bit doom and gloom as we think about this subject. How optimistic are you that this trend is reversible?
I'm more optimistic than some, but nevertheless, the trend is there. It's a clear trend and it needs to be reversed. I come back to one statistic. At the time of Emperor Constantine's conversion to Christianity at the beginning of the 4th century, only 10% of citizens of the Roman Empire then were Christians, really active Christians. So that's roughly what we are now in Australia. So history shows that that's a very solid base on which to build if you've got people who are fired up and prepared to actually live their faith.
Well, Roy, you managed to probably provoke and irritate people on every part of the spectrum on this, question.
It.
And in that sense, the publishers are going to love this. It's ABC Books. The book is called Post God Nation: How Religion Fell Off the Radar in Australia and What Might Be Done to Get It Back On. Roy Williams, great to have you in. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Simon.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. For more on this topic and many more, go to publicchristianity.org.